You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is an interesting time in our beloved Commonwealth. It's a challenging time in many, many parts of the Commonwealth as well. I saw some photos the other day of Governor Glenn Youngkin and the First Lady, Suzanne Youngkin, meeting with first responders, meeting with people who were dealing with this terrible hurricane that has impacted our state. And I'm very, very happy to say that Governor Glenn Youngkin is joining us. Governor, as always, thank you for making some time for us.
Jeff, great to be with you, and thank you for your very warm thoughts with regards to the suffering that so many Virginians are going through today. Listen, Hurricane Helene was a huge storm, and she hit us hard. And I first just want to thank the amazing heroism from our first responders, who we pre-positioned with extensive capabilities set up in advance of the storm, and they performed in such memorable, heroic ways. Jeff, we had two Virginians who tragically lost their lives, but we had over 70 life-saving rescues that were performed by our Virginia State Police and our Virginia National Guard and our Swiftwater Rescue crews from all over the state. From our local law enforcement, sheriffs and police departments, from our EMS personnel, firefighters, from our VDOT personnel. I mean, it was an all-hands-on-deck moment in order to rescue Virginians who were being inundated, truly, by this historic storm. And then we find ourselves in a moment where we still haven't stabilized people's lives. We have electricity that is now almost all come back online, but not yet. We've got cell service that still is not fully restored. We want to make sure that Virginians who need access to health care get access to their necessary treatments if they have them, or oxygen supplies or pharmaceuticals if they need them. And then finally, and we have people who've just lost everything. And so the tremendous work that we've been doing to get people into a warm, safe place to stay, with sometimes having to provide literally clothing because it's all been destroyed, warm meals, and of course starting the process now of assessing the recovery. It's been an inspirational week. It's been a tragic week, and I'm so proud of the way Virginia has reacted.
Well, Governor, it was inspiring to all to see you and the First Lady there. Some of the photographs that I was able to view from the Virginia State Police high above these waters, giving indications of what they were doing and all of the rescue efforts. It is amazing. And I know it meant the world to those first responders for you to meet with them on a personal basis. You talk to the first responders, but boy, you're also dealing with those folks we just mentioned. They've lost, in some cases, everything. Were you able to provide a little bit of hope to them? And are there going to be resources available, state, federal, et cetera, for them to access?
Yeah, let me just begin with the tragic circumstances that exist. And Jeff, there was a woman who we met as we were in an area where people's homes had literally just been washed away. And she came up and said, "Governor, I've lost everything. I don't have any clothes. I don't have any place to go. I don't have any food." And what was amazing to see was the community just wrap around her, and the state emergency management personnel, along with the city manager from that part of Giles County, from the church support groups, just put their arms out and provided her with a safe place to stay, a warm meal, clothes, and we'll start the process. But at the beginning, it's just providing people those basic necessities. That is what has been most heart-wrenching, but also most uplifting, is to see us react. The support is big. So, of course, the state has moved in very strongly on a preemptive basis up front to get ready, but also flooding the zone with our Virginia Department of Emergency Management personnel, VDOT personnel to clean and clear roads. We've had folks from the Department of Corrections, inmates, come and serve nearly 10,000 meals. We've had folks from the Virginia Department of Health just mobilize to make sure people can get access to the health care that they need. And I have been so encouraged by the selfless nature of state government and local government. And now, over the weekend, we were able to receive the declaration of emergency from the federal government. And so when we all of a sudden see those resources pile in as well, and then, of course, this morning we were able to announce the approval of our application for a major declaration of emergency, again, from the federal government. And that unloads even more resources. So there is an enormous amount of support and help in the region. I would say if folks are interested in supporting charities that are very active, of course, what we've seen is an organization called God's Pit Crew out of Danville. It went to work immediately with resources, and that has been an amazing step for folks. Of course, there's lots of other places between churches that have gone to work as well, but it's been an all-hands-on-deck effort, and I'm just so proud of what's happening. It's going to be a long recovery, Jeff. With the extensive nature of the damage to the roads and bridges and homes that have been lost, business interrupted in a big way, we're going to have a long recovery, and I have great confidence in Virginians' ability to recover, and we're going to have to continue to work together. It's not a 24-hour, 48-hour effort. This is going to be weeks and months, if not years, in order to get everybody back to where they were.
Well, kudos to you, Governor Youngkin, for getting that the paperwork, if you will, to the federal government for those declarations of emergency ahead of time, really being in front of this. And you're talking about all the wonderful people in our beloved Commonwealth coming together. This is what we've always called the Virginia way. We just, you know this, we help those people that need help, and we're not looking for a lot of glory. We just do what needs to be done. I want to ask you for a moment to pivot to an executive order that that I have in front of me, and I am just so thrilled to read this. You know, and my listeners know, there are a couple of issues that are near and dear to my heart. Those in our community who have disabilities and special needs, and as a former police officer, anybody who has ever served as a first responder, you've been really head and shoulders above any other governor that I've seen supporting each of those areas. I want to talk a little bit about this First Responder Wellness Office, this Executive Order 38. Can you let us all in on what that is and why you decided now is the time to do this?
Well, of course, nothing is more important than supporting our first responders. And of course, has there been a better example of their impact and heroism than just over the course of this last week? I mean, Jeffrey, you saw the Virginia State Police helicopter units evacuating patients from a roof of a hospital in Tennessee, sure, and saving lives. And we watched unbelievable Virginia National Guard helicopter crews rappelling into rushing water and rescuing people off of the hoods of their cars. And so this is a group that needs our support and deserves our support. And the reality, of course, is that when you constantly are placed in those kinds of circumstances, it takes a toll. It takes a toll on not just your physical health, but your emotional health as well. And that's why this executive order is so important, because it formalizes many of the informal things that we are doing. We first are establishing an Office of First Responder Wellness. It's so important for us to recognize that doing things off the corner of our desk oftentimes work but aren't dependable. And I want to make sure that we have a permanent office looking after our first responders' wellness. It second authorizes $3 million of funding for the office to create a grant program to support local agencies and nonprofits to provide the kind of wraparound support that our first responders deserve. And then finally, we're going to have a senior person, a chief coordinating officer, who will work across government at the local level, at the state level, and yes, even drawing into some of the federal resources to make sure that we are bringing together all of our capabilities in a coordinated way to support these first responder heroes. This is a really important effort to permanentize and make much more effective the collaboration and the funding to take care of these folks that take such good care of us.
Well, God bless you for doing that, Mr. Governor. It's an essential thing, Governor Youngkin, and it has been long overdue. And honest to goodness, thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that. You mentioned the national stage, the federal government. As we are recording this, we are in the midst of a port strike. And a mutual friend of ours, Tom Leonard, was with me yesterday and said, Jeff, we could see prices going through the roof because these ships with containers are sitting at the ports. They're not being offloaded, and we're not going to have things in the store. What's your sense of that? And will President Biden step to the plate? Because he does have the power, if I understand it, to get these guys back to work.
Yeah, I wrote to him last week. I wrote to President Biden and Vice President Harris and urged them in the strongest way possible to call everyone together and avert this strike. And they just didn't do it. And we now see a real economic catastrophe because the impact of having these most important ports shut from Maine to Texas, all across and down the Atlantic coast, around the Gulf Coast, is estimated to cost us between $4 and $5 billion a day. And I think the reality of what is happening may not be fully appreciated until we have a supply chain interruption that possibly could be as bad as we saw at the worst time during the pandemic. And just think about it. Critical pharmaceutical supplies, the critical supply chains for manufacturing, and to have all of the items on shelves that people need, exports of our own agricultural industry that need to be delivered to other places in the United States and around the world. And it's even made 10 times worse by the fact that we have the entire Southeast region suffering from the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, and our ports are shut. President Biden and Kamala Harris can resolve this. They must lead. And I have to say, this is a leadership gut check for them. They must use their executive authority to bring people back to the table. They can use their Taft-Hartley authority and get everybody back to work in a cooling off period. They can avert a massive economic disruption. And can you imagine, here we are moving into the fall with Christmas around the corner, and supply chains are going to be massively disruptive. Inflation is going to present itself again if this thing extends for any long period of time. And this is a leadership gut check for President Biden and Vice President Harris to get this thing back on the rails and to use the authority that has been used before in order to make sure that we don't have extensive economic damage. I must add, Virginia is particularly exposed here. We have 60 ships sitting off the coast that can't unload. And the sad reality is the portion of this national contract that pertains to Virginia has been long done. And so the workers at the Virginia port and the shippers at the Virginia port agreed they're part of this over the summer. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why the president and the vice president shouldn't haul everybody back into work, keep things open for a cooling off period, and meanwhile, force a resolution here so that we can keep America and Virginia working.
Well, let us hope that the right things are going to be done in Washington, D.C. Governor Youngkin, I always appreciate you making time, and I know your schedule is packed, but if you've got 60 seconds, please, you tell the First Lady that her Sisterhood Spotlight program is an absolute hit here at the Katz family home. We love it. Well, I don't know, but who cares? Governor Glenn Youngkin, thanks so much for his generosity. I really do. I always appreciate the governor making some time with us. As you picked up, we had to pre-record some stuff with him. He was hitting Fox. I was doing Newsmax and Rosh Hashanah and all this other stuff. Listen, it's all good. It's all good. We got a lot of stuff. Our buddy Brian Maloney is going to be along in a couple of moments. There's terrible fallout from Hurricane Helene, but you notice what's missing? Any coverage in the media. George W. Bush was told he was killing people with his response to Katrina. This, what are you going to do? 327, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. 335, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is, it's Friday Eve. Yes. Oh, I almost said the dreaded T word. I'm sorry. No, it is Friday Eve. Thanks very much to Charles Pyle for taking some of the Glenn Youngkin interview and sharing it with you. It's important stuff. And I just want to pause for a moment before I move on to my dear friend Brian Maloney and pay tribute. I know it sounds a little weird, but I have to. I really do. Charles has elevated the game back in that newsroom 100% in 3 weeks. Simple as that. Clear as that. We are so thankful. I am so thankful that he's in place now, doing great stuff. Gary Hess continues to do great stuff. Sarah Huffman is absolutely contributing some great pieces. We got a solid operation right now, which we haven't had in a long time. I mean, it's been, I'll just say it, because I've been here a long time. It's 12 years. We haven't had it in years. So it is great, great, great to hear that. Okay, enough of that. Let me bring in somebody else who I actually am quite fond of. He's a great guy in terms of offering analysis and insight when it comes to political issues. But he is also, I remind you, truly one of the best talk radio guys I have ever heard, my friend Brian Maloney. Brian, thank you for being here.
Hey, great to be back.
It's good to hear you. Now let's start with the strike. This ought to be a huge issue. Then we're going to move on to the hurricane, which ought to be a big issue. But what are you sensing here? Because I don't feel that either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris is paying any sort of a price in the media for any of those two events.
No, I mean, that's what's incredible. I mean, what it shows is the power, the sheer power that the media still has to manipulate quite a few minds, maybe not all of us, but enough of us to be able to successfully provide cover for these guys, because this, what's going on right now, is absolutely horrendous. A lot of people are calling the hurricane aftermath, you know, basically a second Maui. I saw that a lot today, and I think that's actually a very apt comparison. And the strike, I think, you know, people just, it's bubbling under the surface. People are starting to worry. I mean, you know, you're hearing about Costco shelves being stripped bare and that kind of thing. So, I mean, but yeah, I mean, imagine if this were a Republican in the Oval Office. If we had a president at all, of course.
Yeah.
Nobody can figure out what's going on there. But if we had that, you'd never hear the end of this strike and how it was that person's fault.
That's right. You and I remember President George W. Bush flying over the flood scene. Oh, my God, he's a terrible human being. We were told that George W. Bush, if I remember, they said he was trying to kill black people in New Orleans with Katrina, right? I'm not misremembering that.
They actually said he caused Hurricane Katrina.
That's right. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. And nothing. It's absolute crickets now, man.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, Jeff, and the bottom line is, then you have FEMA coming in, right, and telling people, well, you know, you can't have volunteer rescuers, that we're going to arrest them. So the guy with the helicopter who's been ferrying people out of the flooded zones, you know, on his own dime, right, if you do it again, we'll arrest you.
Yeah.
Anybody trying to help is turned back, threatened with arrest. That's what they did in Maui. Why do they want people to suffer?
It's a great question. Pete Buttigieg earlier today says no private drones. Now this one I'm going to call, Brian, and you can agree with me or not, but those private drones have cameras, and those cameras can show everybody what the devastation is, and that devastation lies right at the feet of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and that's why Pete Buttigieg says no private drones.
Well, yeah, they don't want anybody to see it, but they also don't want any help in there. And as you, if you've ever been through the middle of a natural disaster, you know that FEMA is your worst enemy. They bring trouble and they bring no relief. And that's exactly what they've been doing for many, many years. So you have that. And if you've lost your home, you can't book a hotel room within, you know, 10, 20, 30 miles or more because FEMA booked them all. They booked entire hotels at a time. So there's nowhere to go. There's no help. And if anyone tries to help you, they're threatened with arrest. Oh, and by the way, here's $750, you know, $750 for your troubles. That's right. But, you know, Zelensky gets billions more, yeah. Billions.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Zelensky leaves here with $8 billion. You have Mayorkas today telling us, oh, we don't have any money. FEMA has no money because, well, Vice President Harris and the gang, they decided to spend it all on services for illegal aliens. I mean, this is just, it's insanity, Brian, and I keep waiting for the legacy news media to utter even a peep, and it is dead flipping silence.
Well, and, you know, the interesting thing about this is I saw some people today calling it another land grab like Maui, and maybe it is. I mean, Asheville had been a really hot real estate market, as I'm sure, you'd heard all about in recent years. People were flocking there from all over the country. You know, they were even getting the dreaded Californians in there, which is, you know, very, very sad.
Yeah,
and
everything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, when you're there, you're, you know.
That's right.
That's, you know, so that's where we're at. And the question is this, so if we've wiped out these towns, and I'm not saying they did that on purpose, I'm just saying they're not helping. You know, what is the election impact? You know, are they hoping that these people don't vote? Because a lot of these towns were red, Asheville's mm-hmm. blue, but mm-hmm. I mean, what happens there, right? I mean, North Carolina, the polls are almost dead even.
Right. Right. Now, you know, Brian, here's one of the things that I've got to ask you. Where the very fact that you and I are even asking that question, does that not bother you a little bit that we have to ask that question?
Well, I think it is. I think it's very, very disturbing. And, you know, as we know, they will resort to any dirty trick in the last month. I'm not saying they caused this storm, but what I'm saying is they know how to manipulate the results. And that's, you know, the aftermath. And when there's an election a month away, you have to watch them like a hawk because you know they're up to no good. You know, if their lips are moving, they're lying. Yeah. And they're up to, they're not there to help anybody ever. And I think we've learned that about Washington through enough of these that, I mean, are people of Maui, they ever come out, you know, okay on the other end of this? No, they're still sitting there in ruins with 1,000 people missing, and that never improved.
That's right. Brian Maloney is joining us. Brian, let me ask you, obviously we're all laser beam focused on the election that is coming up. Your sense of the J.D. Vance, Tim Walz debate the other night?
Well, I think it was really, really interesting because for a bunch of reasons. But number one, I think J.D. Vance did what he needed to do, and that is to completely shoot down the fake narrative that had been built around him by Democrats, which is that he's some kind of weirdo who does weird things and sick things that they had maliciously attributed to him that were made up, that were just completely fabricated. And just to show, hey, I'm a regular guy who's worked my tail off from nothing to get to where I am, and I got a lot of great ideas. And it was a lot of, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that was really, really important for him to convey in this. On the other hand, what you saw was a guy who did this kind of aw shucks routine. You know, I'm just a regular guy. You know, and I'm a knucklehead. I can be a knucklehead. You know, and like, okay, great, you're a knucklehead. Well, what happens if you become president and you're a knucklehead who makes up tall tales? I you know, so the thing was, he did try to argue substantive points with Vance and try to come across as some kind of moderate. He's an extremist.
Yes, he is.
You know, he does come across as a decent guy, but the facial expressions were just weird. The funny looks on his face, and I just think it came from a lack of preparation. You know, if you work with candidates, one thing you do is you put them in front of cameras and you do practice runs and then you play back. And, you know, we all dread seeing our video played back to us.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could have kind of pointed to some of that and said, you know, you're making some bug eyes here and some funny looks there. And then he looks sad the rest of the time, which I don't understand why. He just always looks sad. I don't know if that's just, I called it resting sad face, but I don't know, you know. I don't know what that was there. So he came across as probably a decent guy that you would like, but not ready. You know, and the comparisons to Chris Farley, the late comedian, you know, I mean, very, very, except that Chris Farley was a hysterical comedian. And then this isn't funny because, as you know, our future's at stake.
I don't know. I thought looking at Walls, I did have that sense that at any moment he could share with us that he lives in a van down by the river. And,
absolutely.
Right? He would. Hey, was the Jack Smith 167-page filing, was that the big October surprise, do you think?
Well, if it was their big surprise, I hope they realize how disappointing that is, because that is just being seen clearly immediately as for what it is, and that is a tactic to manipulate the election 1 month out. I think anybody can see through that. And now it's abundantly clear, if it wasn't a million times before, that someone, a character like Jack Smith, is only in this game to score political points, and there's no legal basis for anything that he's doing. So I don't think this moves the needle.
No.
I really feel like the true October surprise is something else.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it was Hillary that was alluding to some kind of surprise coming, and I'm sure they've got something. I think the next month will be a roller coaster where we are going to be, you know, going up and down every single day. We're going to be I feel like people are approaching this election day with dread. The whole country is. I think it's just dread. I think we dread elections now because they're miserable experiences, and it's just something to get past and hope we stay in one piece. That's where we're at now. It's sad.
No, it is very sad. I also want to share with you, Brian, I read that the 167 pages, and I felt sad after that because I thought, well, if this what you guys were banking on, I'd say you laid an egg. All it says is it was a circus at the beginning. Mr. Smith is still the ringmaster. I don't think it changes a single solitary vote. Everybody who hated Trump before that, if they even bother to read it, nobody reads. We don't read 167 characters, let alone 167 pages now.
Well, right. So,
right?
Exactly, Jeff. We consistently have 5-7% of the vote that say they are still undecided. They are not reading Jack Smith's 167-page report to decide how they're going to vote. They're going to the supermarket to see if they can still afford eggs, right, and milk,
that's right,
and bread.
That's right.
That, you know, and that's what that's about. So, you know, and if they can afford those things, they'll take that into consideration in their vote. But they are not reading Jack Smith's report. You know, this is why the people in Washington, they think that everything revolves around their little thing that they've got going there. And out in the real world, it's about survival. You know, it's about, was I able to pay my bills this month? Can I pay them next month? That's where we're at. Not some report, you know. Two different worlds we're living in here.
It is. It is. One is us on planet Earth. The other one's a bizarro world. But anyway, Brian, do me a favor. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media, please.
Yeah, sure. As usual, I would love to have your listeners join me at facebook.com/mediaequalizer. Facebook.com/mediaequalizer. One word, media equalizer.
Nobody better. Thank you, my friend. That is Brian Maloney. He is the media equalizer now. He's been the media equalizer for years. You need to be following Brian again. Over on Facebook, look for Media Equalizer. You are going to love. I mean this. I've been a friend with Brian for a couple of decades now, and I've been a fan of his work even longer than that. But on Facebook, look for Media Equalizer, and you will not be disappointed. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. 3:52, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. It is a Friday Eve, and the second dude, the vice gentleman, I don't know, whatever his title is, Doug Emhoff, you know, Kamala Harris's husband, he's now being accused of slapping an ex-girlfriend outside the Cannes Film Festival back in 2012. The Daily Mail out of England has the report and says they're relying on the recollections of three of that girlfriend's friends. I don't know if the report is true. I have no idea. But it's out there now. It's also being alleged that there was a settlement of some sort. I read $80,000. Don't quote me on that because I'm not pulling that up in the moment. I think it said $80,000. Some sort of a settlement and a non-disclosure agreement. Gosh, does that sound familiar? Will we convene some sort of a federal grand jury to investigate this? A non-disclosure agreement, if there is one? I mean, it's nuts. But listen, this speaks to Kamala Harris. It speaks to Kamala Harris and her choices. Let's look at her first official choice after she was selected to be the Democrat Party nominee. She selected Tim Walz, who is about three different types of grossly incompetent and he's a knucklehead. Oh, come on, I'm just a knucklehead. You're not a knucklehead. You're a dangerous radical who may, in fact, have some concerning issues with the People's Republic of China. Sorry, this is not a oh golly gee whiz sort of a thing. The good news is that Kamala Harris is actually performing worse than Joe Biden. Is it too late for the Democrats now to go back to Joe Biden? Wouldn't that be something? Maybe that's the October surprise. Is some Democrat comes out and says, boy, oh boy, did we screw up? We're sorry. Just forget it ever happened. It'll be like Dallas many, many years ago. Like Joe Biden will come out of the shower and everything will be fine.
Got hairy leg that turned blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight and then watch the hair come back up again.
Well, that's a platform to run on for sure. No doubt about it. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., John Reed is going to be here. Make sure you're here for John. 3:56, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. 4:05, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Friday Eve, and that is a good, good, good thing. Yes, it actually is. Now, having said that, we got a lot of stuff we're going to be dealing with. There is a decision, a verdict out of Dinwiddie, and that is about the Ivo Otieno matter. Otieno, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing. I know I'm mispronouncing it. Ivo Otieno. Security worker from the state hospital was found not guilty. That's not the only matter, as you know. There are some other folks who have been charged. And at 4:35, we've got Jason Johnson joining us from the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, because the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund has voted to take up the matter of one of the deputy sheriffs who is involved in all of this. So that's. We'll see how that goes. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But again, 4:35. Dr. Keith Abel is going to be here at 5:30. 5. Now, there's a lot of stuff that you and I clearly are dealing with, a lot of stuff that we are talking about, we have to talk about, things that are...
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You gotta take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Quite concerning. I should start with you a little snippet that, I just thought was great, and I know you're gonna think it sounds a little weird, but it doesn't, at least to me. Bill Maher had Al Franken on. Now, Al Franken, you may recall, a former senator from Minnesota. Minnesota seems to produce a lot of screwballs. Al Franken, also a Saturday Night Live guys. Al Franken, also a terribly failed talk show host. Do you remember Air America? Oh, what a disaster that was, right? Where there's a lot of money. Oh, make no mistake. A lot of money at Air America. And they brought in Al Franken for some reason that, boggles the mind. But Al Franken has, I guess, sort of regenerated his pseudo-career, his post-comedy career. Remember, he was kicked out of the Senate. What was it? He was groping a woman. And it was an old photo. I remember this now. There was a woman who had fallen asleep on a flight somewhere. Maybe it was a USO tour, something like that. Don't quote me on that, but I do recall the photo, and he's making like a goofy face, like he's going to grope her. I don't know that he did or not, but that was enough. That was enough, and it was very much during that whole Me Too movement. So he's gone, but I guess he's trying to come back. So, long story short, I know I'm just making it longer, but he's on with Bill Maher, and it is priceless. This exchange is priceless. Cut number 3.
Chinese TVs, okay? Why don't we say cars, because that's what we're actually doing under the Biden administration.
Okay.
100% tariffs on Chinese cars. Why doesn't it not work only for Republicans? I don't get it, because this is what Biden is doing.
I just want to get the concept of what a tariff is. I'm going to use a different example. I'm going to use televisions, okay? Let's say, according to Trump, China pays the tariff. China doesn't pay the tariff.
But let's say it's cars.
Yes, let's say.
Why doesn't it work the same way? Why isn't it a bad idea when the Democrats are doing? We have to protect our own makers here.
Well, in that case, damn it, Biden's wrong.
There you go. Was that so hard? Let's not play team sports.
Wow. I know Bill Maher's a lot of things. I know. But let me tell you something. Bill Maher is actually calling out the leftists. Now, you notice I didn't say the liberals. Because Bill Maher will tell you to this day, he's still a liberal. He's still a classic liberal. He's absolutely, totally, thoroughly disgusted with the Democrats because they have left liberalism behind. They have. Liberalism behind and embraced this extremist ideology. It's just awful. And he knows that if you are standing with the people who hate the Jews, that's probably not a good thing to do. If you are standing with these pro-terrorists who are getting ready just 4 days from now to hold events all over the country. Oh, October the 7th is going to be a major day for all the wrong reasons in a lot of places. You and I probably thinking, October the 7th, the one-year anniversary of these the savages invading Israel and slaughtering. They weren't fighting them. They were slaughtering people. It's 1 year. I mean, it's amazing to think it's a year ago. There's still hostages being held. Our biggest, strongest, most direct Richmond connection was Hirsch. And we know that he was maimed, he was kidnapped, and he was murdered at the hands of these terrorists shortly before he probably would have been rescued by the IDF. It's horrific. I hope that this doesn't fade out of memory, the idea that there are still so many people being held hostage in Gaza. Now, everybody wants to beat up on Bibi Netanyahu, it seems, starting with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, or Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, whichever way you want to slice it. Joe Biden says, even though Iran just launched 200 missiles at Israel, Israel should not hit the Iranian nuclear facilities. Why? Why would you not hit the nuclear facilities? If they are able to launch the hypersonic missiles, which they did, and we know that they are less than a year away from being able to have nuclear missiles that will hit anywhere in the Middle East. I mean, you can continue to hate the Jews if you want and still say, gosh, we don't want Iran to have nuclear missiles, do we? If you're in Jordan, wouldn't you be concerned? If you're in Egypt, wouldn't you be concerned? Saudi Arabia? I mean, Qatar might be the only place that goes, eh, what are you going to do? Abu Dhabi? Dubai? I mean, I can keep going down the list if you want, but you get what I'm saying, right? Bibi Netanyahu, I've said it before, I say it again, Bibi Netanyahu understands that the survival of the Jewish people now rests on his shoulders. And he is not, under any circumstances, going to do anything less, offer anything less than 100% in his efforts to keep the Jewish people alive. And Joe Biden, this buffoon, says that Israel should not hit Iran's nuclear facilities. I guess one of the reasons that Joe Biden says that Israel shouldn't hit the facilities is because Joe Biden has given them billions of dollars to rebuild their program. I mean, if you think about it, that's American money right there. So, yeah, sure. 200 people dead as a result of Hurricane Helene. FEMA says, well, each of you can get $750 if you can figure out how to get to us. Oh, and by the way, that's it. We're out of money. Mayorkas today said, we're out of money. FEMA has no money. Well, maybe if you ask the 12 million illegal aliens you welcomed with open arms into the country and provided with all sorts of resources and presents and prizes, maybe you can get some money back from them. Maybe you can ask some of the cartels that now control our border, thanks to you, if they'd be willing to pony up, you know, a couple of bucks. Maybe they could write it off their taxes. Charitable contribution to the United States of America. Maybe. It's outrageous, I know. Absolutely. Absolutely outrageous. I don't know if we still got any tickets left for Politics and Pints. I'm going to ask you to do the heavy lifting on this because I don't know. But if we do, you're going to find them over at WRVA.com, WRVA.com. I hope we have a couple left, and you'll be able to grab a ticket or two and join us. It's October the 16th. Now we're like 2 weeks away at the Hopewell, the historic Beacon Theater. Now, I'm going to remind you, the whole goal of this when we put it together 5 years ago is that we keep moving it around Central Virginia. So this is actually going to be the third time in a row we're at the Beacon Theater. That leads me to believe it'll be the last time we're at the Beacon Theater for a while. So if you're in that neck of the woods, you know, Prince George, the Tri-Cities, etc., Southern Chesterfield, good time to get those tickets. WRVA.com. 415 Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. 421 Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. There are Americans who are perishing. There are Americans who have lost their homes. There are Americans who have absolutely no help coming to them. And we ought to care. I'm just telling you flat out, you and I ought to care. 200 people dead as a result of Hurricane Helene. That's right now. Will there be more? God, I hope not, but it's possible. And we all should be asking exactly what is being done. Where is Kamala Harris? Where is Joe Biden? Where is FEMA? Where are all of these folks? Why have they now decided that no private helicopters can go in and rescue people? How about Pete Buttigieg? Now, here's a guy who is the Secretary of Transportation, I think, because he owned a toy train set when he was a kid. Cut number four.
Our goal is to make sure that funding is no obstacle to very quickly getting people the relief that they need and deserve. There's also some safety issues that come up. For example, temporary flight restrictions to make sure that the airspace is clear for any flights or drone activity that might be involved in helping to allow those emergency responders to do their job.
Now, wait a minute. You can't have any private drones. You can't have any private helicopters. It's safety issues. Well, let's say for a second that the helicopters are safety issues. How are the drones a safety issue? I'm very serious. I'm not a drone expert. I am friendly with...
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Number of folks who actually are leaders, and they don't call them drones, by the way, unmanned aircraft, but those folks have painted a picture of, I'm going to call them drones because most of us do, of those drones being quite useful, especially when it comes to surveillance, recon, looking at areas and seeing what's going on, flying high enough so as not to disturb anybody on the ground, and flying low enough that they're not interacting negatively with actual, you know, big planes. Seems like drones would be the perfect thing to have deployed over these disaster areas right about now. Here's why I think this administration has said we're going to ban private drones. And it pains me to say it, but I have to say it. I think they are determined that you and I are not going to see the images because it is such a disaster and because they apparently are not doing what they need to do. And they are politicizing this, and it just breaks my heart. It's like the strike by the longshoremen. This is another thing that I got to tell you has been politicized. But there's another take to this on the longshoremen. Let me give you another little piece here. You may or may not have thought about it. Joe Biden today, under his powers with Taft-Hartley, could order the longshoremen back to work. He could do it today. If he does it today, then you and I get back to, you know, just the regular world and doing everything we normally do. And that would be really good for Kamala Harris. If he doesn't order them back, you and I are about to see outrageous prices and empty store shelves. Well, if Joe Biden were running for re-election, I have a feeling he would order them back. But he's not running for re-election, and he clearly hates Kamala Harris and the folks who pitched him right off the side of the cliff. I think he's not going to order them back, because he knows it negatively impacts her campaign. Oh, paybacks. Yeah. It is 425. Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. 435. Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is a Friday Eve. I got to tell you, weather-wise, it's not bad at all. We've got some sunshine, relatively cool and comfortable temperatures, and from the looks of it, it's going to be like that for a while. That's good. I'm glad to see that. We've had enough rain for a bit. We've got a decision out of Dinwiddie County. Dinwiddie County jury has found Wavy Jones, a former security staff member at Central State Hospital, not guilty of involuntary manslaughter in the death of Ivo Otieno. You remember this case, right, from March of last year. Well, it is ongoing. There are a number of people who are part of this case, and there are seven deputy sheriffs from the Henrico County Sheriff's Office who were initially indicted on second-degree murder charges. You and I have spoken about the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund many, many times. Generally, our buddy Jimmy Galliano, retired supervisory special agent from the FBI, has talked about it because Jimmy sits on the board. Well, we now have a matter involving a deputy sheriff in Henrico, and I'm very happy to say that Jason Johnson, who's the president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, is joining us to talk about that. Jason, thank you for being here.
Absolutely, Jeff. Great to be with you today.
Well, the pleasure is all ours. Give us the lay of the land. Who exactly are we talking about as far as the deputy sheriff goes, and why did Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund say, yeah, this is a case we are going to take?
Well, Jeff, first of all, I mean, you know, like many of the cases that we get involved in that involve law enforcement officers, it's a tragedy all the way around. You know, there's a loss of life here of a man, Mr. Otieno, who obviously suffered from mental illness, was in crisis, and unfortunately died during his confinement when he was actually at Central State Hospital. As you noted, the case involves a number of sheriff's deputies. It had, you know, seven that were initially charged with murder, and then a handful of hospital workers at Central State. We were approached about potentially providing some legal defense funding for one of the deputy sheriffs involved, Kyle Sanders. And we, you know, took a very careful review of the case, looked at all of the evidence. Probably the best piece of evidence many people have seen is the video. And so the video, I think, conveys that this was a situation where the sheriff's deputies and the hospital workers are doing the very best they can with a man who was in crisis, who was very strong, had been combative, had been fighting, had been resisting, and they just were trying to get the help he deserved, and unfortunately he died. And, you know, one of the big issues in the trial was the cause of death, and you know, we can get into that, but there was some competing testimony about whether it was something called positional restraint asphyxia or whether it was a heart attack. And I think in light of the jury's verdict, that we don't know the details of why they acquitted this hospital worker, but it very well may have been the cause of death, as well as some of the other evidence that really showed law enforcement acting in good faith and really doing the best they can.
Jason Johnson is joining us, the president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. Jason, we've both seen video throughout the years, and I don't know about you, there have been some piece of video where I just cringed and thought, oh my God, that is wrong, or that's painful, or boy, this is going to be tough for anybody to explain, but I understand what's going on. That seems to be the case with this entire Otieno matter. There have been bits and pieces of the video that have been selectively released that have really steered people in certain directions, but it's the totality of this that you have to look at, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I would even say, you know, I do sometimes see videos, even from my perspective, where I see law enforcement interacting with someone in a way that I don't think is good. Either it's just going to be difficult to explain, or frankly, in some cases, I would say few cases, but some cases where it's just outright wrong. This is not one of those cases. What you don't see on the videos, you don't see any officer use force on Mr. Otieno. There's no striking, kicking, punching, or anything like that. You really don't even see anyone applying weight to him in terms of like putting a knee on top of him. And that is something that law enforcement officers know can lead to positional restraint asphyxia. Mm-hmm. And even Mr. Otieno's body position is very hard to discern from looking at the video. And I understand there was testimony in this case that he actually was not prone, as alleged by the Commonwealth. So, all in all, this case is a little bit of a head scratcher for me. I think there was a rush to judgment. I think the then Commonwealth's attorney felt an incredible amount of pressure. You know, Ben Crump flying to town, riling up the media. It was a national media story. Yep. And that, you know, that kind of pressure on a prosecutor can result in charges that that should never have been brought. And I think that's what we have in this case. And as your listeners probably know, and as I know you, you know, Jeff, the Commonwealth attorney at the time then resigned and left the country. And we're two prosecutors later now. So things have changed quite a bit in this case.
And I think one of the things we should point out, and it's certainly no offense to the fine people in Dinwiddie County, but it is a relatively small county in terms of population. It's not a CA's office that sees cases like this on a regular basis. And you put that together with, as you point out, Ben Crump parachuting into town. All of a sudden, this is a national issue. There are racial overtones. There's all, and I personally believe that the CA charged incorrectly, overcharged at the very least. So where are we today? We know, because Jimmy Galliano is a frequent guest on this program, Jason, that Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund does not take every case. You get a lot of people asking or requesting some sort of assistance, and you review it and say, no, we're not taking that because we think you are in the wrong, or because it just doesn't sit right. You looked at this with, is it one deputy sheriff that reached out? Is it all the deputy sheriffs? And you said, yeah, we're going to take this case.
Yeah, so Deputy Kyle Sanders is the deputy that we are supporting his legal defense. He's one of now two deputies that remain charged in the case, and we've been going back and forth with Deputy Sanders, his legal counsel, and so forth over the last number of months. What we hope will happen, since your question is what happens now, is what we really hope will happen is the Commonwealth Attorney will take another look at this case. They've now got a jury verdict acquitting the first defendant. And, the evidence is going to be the same for defendant number two and defendant number three. If you watch the video, there's really no conduct in the video that distinguishes one defendant from the other. In fact, there's really no conduct that distinguishes the current defendants from the initial defendants. So, I mean, there's a question about how did they decide who to remain the remaining charges against. It's really hard to tell by looking at the evidence. What we hope is that they'll take a very close look at this, and I think they will. And they'll determine that this is not a criminal case, and none of the two remaining deputies, their cases should not proceed to trial, and we should move on with the understanding that it's not a criminal matter. This was, if anything, there's always potential to learn and improve from any incident, and this is no different. And we have to look objectively at these cases, and if we can get better, if law enforcement can get better, it should. But just because you get a bad outcome doesn't mean that someone should be charged with a crime and sent to prison.
Spot on. It is absolutely my opinion. You're absolutely correct, Jason. Give everybody a reminder, if you don't mind, that they can help the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. We want you guys to be able to take the cases that need to be taken. The website that people can look at?
Sure, yeah. So our website is policedefense.org. Lots of information on our website, information about cases that were, other cases around the country in which we're supporting law enforcement officers that we believe are wrongly charged with crimes related to their work. Also, lots of other information. In addition to our case defense work, we also do a lot of public advocacy on behalf of law enforcement, try to tell the story of the brave men and women of law enforcement who are working hard in trying circumstances, and general criminal justice issue. We push back against local prosecutors that are more focused on prosecuting law enforcement officers than people who are actually committing crimes. So policedefense.org is where you can find that, and then we're on all the big social media platforms like X and Facebook and Instagram, and our handle there on all three is LELDS.
And if folks are looking at it and say, look, I don't know about any of these other cases, but my local deputy here in Henrico, I'd like to help him out. Can they specify that that's the case they're looking to support?
If they want to do that, we'd have to ask them to mail. If you go to the website, we're able to take donations through the website, and they can indicate which officer they prefer to support. But if they send us a donation through the mail, we can handle that specifically if they just send us a note to which case that they'd like it to go. In this case, to support Deputy Sanders.
Okay, so easiest thing, though, policedefense.org, policedefense.org. If you do want to mail a check, you'll find the mailing address there. If you just want to do it online, you can do it there. Jason, thank you for doing what you do at Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, and I appreciate you making some time for us today.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here. Tell Jimmy I said hi if I don't talk to him before the next time he joins you.
You bet. Thank you so much. That is Jason Johnson. He is the president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund. This is all involving that Otieno matter. And I know people who knew Ivo Otieno, thought he was a wonderful human being. I have no doubt. And there's no doubt as you look at the video that this is somebody in crisis. The question is, was there anybody involved in that? And in particular, Henrico County Deputy Sheriff Sanders doing anything wrong? And the verdict today out of Dinwiddie would indicate that the answer is no. No. It is about this question. Did Mr. Otieno die as a result of being positioned in such a way? What was his breathing obstructed? That's asphyxiation. Or was it a heart attack? Well, again, the decision out of Dinwiddie has found a former security staff member at Central State not guilty. And I would say that probably, hopefully, bodes well for the deputy sheriffs. 446, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WR. 452, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Friday Eve. I did mention to you that I'm going to be getting lunch for Julia's classroom tomorrow, but I also want to share something with you. I got yelled at the other day. No, I did. Ms. Mitchell yelled at, well, all right, she didn't raise her voice, but you know, she's a teacher. She's like a real deal teacher. You know what I mean? And yeah, so the other day I'm dropping Julia. Oh, I'm picking Julia up, rather. Miss Mitchell says to me, she says, Mr. Katz. And she always calls us Mr. Katz and Mrs. Katz, and we can't get her to call. Because, again, she's like an old school teacher, man. I mean, she's young and everything, but she's got, you know, I'm the teacher. And it's like, good. That's what Julia wants and needs. Well, maybe Julia doesn't want it. I don't know, but she needs it. So she says, Mr. Katz.
Yes.
You have to brush Julia's hair in the morning. And No, Mr. Katz. We will style it for you when she comes to go, but you have to brush it in the morning. You know, whenever Heidi is out of town, poor Julia just always winds up looking like Cindy Lou Who. Because I don't do girls' hair, mainly because I'm not a girl. And I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. And I don't know how to do it. And so I know that she's got a hair string that has like elastic in it. And I pull her hair together and I put that around there. And then, you know, what are you going to do? But Miss Mitchell told me, you have to brush your hair. Now, before you think I'm a terrible father, I had brushed her hair. Which indicates to me, God, not only can I not put the poor girl's hair up to look like something other than a resident of Whoville, but apparently I do a really crappy job of brushing her hair anyway. So you know what I've been doing each morning now, just to cover my own bases? Yeah, with Ms. Mitchell, so I don't get yelled at. I've been taking it's like a wet detangler spray. And I spray Julia's hair all over, even though she's had a shower the night before. I spray it all over. And then I brush it and comb it so that there's no questions but that I did something. So hopefully, I will at some point ace the daughter hair competition. But I just don't think so. I really don't. I got my hair cut today. Stacy over at Waves, who does a great job. If you're looking for a great hair person in Hanover and Ashland, Stacy at Waves is absolutely the way to go. But anyway, I'm telling her this story. She says, you know, Jeff. And she will call me Jeff because she's not my teacher. She says, Jeff, do you need me to come over? I said, what do you mean? I could come over before I come into the shop. I could come over and I could do Julia's hair for you. I was like, no, but I appreciate that. That's one of the things I love about Central Virginia, people who really legitimately care about you. This evening, I'm going to share one other thing I'm going to brag about. You've heard Yael on my show many times. Yael is originally from Israel. She's a great friend long before she came on the show, but she reached out to me. She knew Heidi was out of town. She said, what are you doing for Rosh Hashanah? I said, well, you know, I got house duty here. Do you know that she cooked an entire dinner? It's unbelievable. Scott, her mensch of a husband, came and dropped it off last night. So just one of the many, many, many things that I absolutely love about people who are part of this program. Love my buddy John Reed in the morning. Maybe tomorrow's the day he announces he's running for lieutenant governor. I don't know, but I would join him at 6. It is 4:56. Jeff Katz, News Radio WRBA. 5:05, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is a beautiful Friday Eve. It really is. It's just gorgeous, and I guess it's going to be this way for the most part. I'm going to say the next week or so. Tomorrow's going to have a few more clouds than rays of sunshine, but otherwise, boy, sunny, highs, tickling 80 degrees. I'll take that. No, I really will. I'm perfectly okay with that. Our buddy Dr. Keith Ablo is going to be along at 5:35. I want to try and get inside his head a little bit about what he took from some of the goofy comments from this Tim Walz character the other night. 45 million people actually watched the vice presidential debate. That's a lot of people for a vice presidential debate. Did it change anybody's mind? I don't know. Does anybody really vote for vice president? Maybe there are a couple of people. Maybe some of those people who are on the edge. Well, I don't like Donald Trump because he had a mean tweet 10 years ago. But boy, I sure did like his policies. Those really worked. But it's really tough to vote for. There are people like that. Maybe J.D. Vance is exactly what they needed to see and hear. Maybe they're thinking, oh, okay, well, he'll...
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, I can do this now. I hope so. I really do, because I don't want to sound too hyperbolic, but I believe the future of this nation depends on this election. We have the longshoremen striking right now. They want a 50% pay increase. That's good, right? Now, the argument is they haven't had a contract in a while. That's also true. But their jobs are, at this point, 100% doable by robots, AI, technology. It's a little bit like being the guy who makes the buggy whips when Henry Ford's horseless carriage starts making its appearance. You only got a few years left at that point, right? So the longshoremen are in a battle right now, a fight for their very jobs, which they're not going to win. They can't win, because their jobs are no longer needed. Those particular jobs. Longshoremen used to be called stevedores even before that. These were strong guys. That was the only requirement to become a longshoreman. You certainly didn't need any education or any real training. You needed really strong arms and a strong back. And if you could do that, you could lift a bunch of stuff and move it from there to there, boom, you were the guy. Well, that's not the way this happens anymore. These are all container ships now, right? There's no loose storage of anything. It's all containerized. And those massive ships might have 100, 200, 300, more than that. I don't know. I'll have to send a note to Tom Leonard. Seriously, Tom knows about those things. How many containers you would find on a container ship. But you don't need people now. There are no groups of strong guys picking up those big containers. This can all be done with technology. I've been at a couple of events recently where AI was the subject of discussion. A subject of discussion for broadcast, you know, for this profession. And it's kind of interesting to see the way that it's playing out. There were discussions about AI taking over certain sort of menial tasks in the broadcast world. Well, that makes sense, right? Do you need a real live human being to generate records or logs or enter sales or schedule commercials? Well, the answer is no, you don't. You absolutely do not need a human being to do that. And so those jobs are very quickly going to go away, and they will be replaced with artificial intelligence. Then you pivot. Do you need artificial intelligence for broadcast operations? Depends on what sort of broadcasting you're doing. Do you need them for news? You don't. You don't need human beings for that. You can have a smart AI project that basically functions in the large language model that is an aggregator of news stories. Now, you're still going to need a human being to tell it what's going to be interesting and why it's relatable, why we would want that here. And then that source could put that all together. Well, where's the human being? Well, the human being, in my opinion, remains that person who says, that's not really a good story for us, or that's not for our listeners, or that's not even in this area, because that's still going to be a human function. So you can't do away with the human beings in that area completely. And I would argue that if you've got good, solid news people, as an example, you don't want AI doing that. You want them to utilize AI to help find stories, to help find sound. Totally legitimate use of AI. But you don't want to replace them with AI. What about other broadcast functions? What about the, quote, proverbial disc jockey, right? We've talked about that so many times. I, for one, am always a little taken aback when somebody says, oh, you're a DJ. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. AI is already being used and taking the jobs of disc jockeys, those people who would sit there and say, hey, that was a song, here's another song. And by the way, I didn't write the song, I didn't sing on the song, I got no connection to the song, but you're going to love the song. Those folks are already being replaced. And I'm kind of pointing over here at my laptop like I'm pointing to Jeremy. Jeremy was with me at one of these conferences, right, Jerm? We heard examples of the AI DJ, and people apparently love the AI DJ. I think that's hysterical, really. But those jobs you're going to have to look at. What about talk show hosts, right? I mean, I suppose I'm a little biased in this, but I'm not going to be doing this for the rest of my life. I've been doing it for 33 years. We're on the other end of it. You know what I mean? And now, like, if you were going into this today, you'd really have to be concerned about AI. But we were told, Jerm will back me up on this, we were told that because there are so many variables here in what your opinion might be, what your insight might be, your lifetime of experiences would be, that it's going to be very difficult to replicate that with AI. So maybe the talk radio community still has a couple of years left in it. That'd be nice. But the longshoremen, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. Your jobs are going away very, very rapidly. And I understand you don't want to be made obsolete. You don't want to be made redundant, as the British say. The British have such nice ways of saying things, although we've got bless your heart, so I guess paybacks. But your jobs as longshoremen are going away. And there's nothing that you can do about it. You can complain, and you can strike as you are. You're only getting more people angry at you and less people who are willing to stand and support you. You're making people's lives miserable, and that is not a good way to engender a lot of support. But that is a job that will sooner rather than later be performed 100% with technology. So what are we going to do? I don't know the answer to it. I know you're thinking, well, all right, well, what's the payoff here? There is no payoff. I am sharing it with you because I do not know what the ultimate solution is on that. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see, I suppose, but I think there are tougher times in store for us. Joe Biden is in a very interesting situation right about now. Now, you don't like Joe Biden, I don't like Joe Biden, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Joe Biden gave his entire life in service. No, not to the nation. Oh, God forbid. No, he didn't. He gave it in service to the Democrat Party. And then the Democrat Party went and, well, they pushed him off a cliff. Because they saw terrible poll numbers and they watched his miserable performance in a debate against President Trump. So they push him over the side. They force him out. They select Kamala Harris. Now, remember, this is the party that wants you to believe Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. But they themselves ignore the votes of millions of their own enrolled members to force a candidate on you. And now she is polling lower than Joe Biden. If Joe Biden utilizes his authority under Taft-Hartley, he could order the striking longshoremen back to work and your life and my life would fundamentally return to normal. But it would also help his replacement, Kamala Harris. I think Joe Biden is a very bitter man. I think he's a very angry man. And I think he is absolutely looking at a payback. Because he's going to position this as, I'm going to stand with the unions. I'm the most pro-union president in history. And tough O if that costs Kamala Harris a whole bunch of support. I'm just spitballing here. It is 5:15, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. 5:22, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is a Friday Eve. We've got our good buddy, Dr. Keith Abloh, joining us in a couple of moments. Had a lot of folks reach out and say, hey, Jeff, what's the deal in the book? You're talking about that book you contributed a chapter to. Is it out? It is. We had a soft launch. The Kindle version is available right now if you want it. I think it's 99 cents. And everybody's asking you to write a review. So you can look for Elevate and Empower. Or is it Empower and Elevate? Man, I should know these things, shouldn't I? Well, I didn't name the whole book. I just wrote a chapter. Hang on, I'll tell you. I'm only mildly embarrassed, but you know, when you set the bar low, it's easier to hit it. Elevate and Empower is the book. Elevate and Empower. You can find it on Amazon. Again, it's the Kindle version. It's 99 cents. They're throwing it out there so that everybody can take a look at it, write a review. You'll want to go past, just go to chapter 10. That's my chapter. I think you're going to like it. All right. We need politicians in this country like Pierre Poilievre, who is the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. You know why? Well, take a listen to cut number two.
Are you going to let me answer the question, or are you just going to heckle on behalf of Justin Trudeau? Which is it?
I would love the answer.
Great. Our party does not support tax dollars for media outlets, because that's when we end up with biased media like you, who come here and articulate the PMO talking points, rather than delivering real news to the Canadian people.
Wow! Now, the PMO, that's the Prime Minister's office. It's a little bit like, the White House. They say the PMO. That's what they say. So that guy right there is positioned to be the next Prime Minister of Canada. Yeah. So hopefully he'll be successful. This Justin Trudeau's been there, I think it's now 10 years. And everything gets old after 10 years, right? Like, politically, well, I don't know, maybe everything gets old. You leave a piece of cheese in the fridge for 10 years, it's, even my sloppy salad, my soggy salad gets a little old after a while. Oh, speaking of old and confused, Tim Walz would like to be the Vice President of the United States, but he does want you to know he's a knucklehead. What a zany guy. Cut number five.
Walz struggling when pressed about his past claim that he was visiting China during the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown, when in fact he did not arrive until months later.
I've not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times. All I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this, so I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests, went in, and from that I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
Except, dude, that's not what you said. Far be it for me, because, you know, sometimes I'm just a knucklehead. But that's not what you said. First, you told people you were at Tiananmen Square. Well, that one got real quickly dismissed. Then you said, oh, no, what I meant to say, I was in Hong Kong when all that stuff was happening in Tiananmen Square. Well, there are newspaper articles with him in Nebraska during the Tiananmen Square situation. So he is a knucklehead. I'm going to give him that one. Absolutely, he's a knucklehead. But you know what else he is? He's a hardcore socialist. He is a revolutionary progressive, and he is a confirmed liar. Oh, and he's a knucklehead. So, I mean, by all means, let's make him vice president, right? You are out of your ever-loving minds. 526, Jeff Katz, News Radio W. 535, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRBA. It is gorgeous. There's no other way to describe it. It's beautiful. Still got a little bit of sunshine. The temperature is fine, 75 degrees. The humidity is not terrible. It's a good day. Tomorrow's going to be another good day. We got a couple of good days in store for us, which is great. We're also, what, about 32 days away from the election? And that's the actual election day. I mean, for us, in our Commonwealth, started like 2 weeks ago with early voting. We have a whole election season now. And it is neck and neck. It is as close as it's ever been. And that shouldn't be the case. Oh, no. I mean, from my perspective, obviously, Donald Trump should be winning in a landslide. But we know that's not going to happen, right? People have been cowed into fear to say that they are supporting Donald Trump. So he's always underrepresented in the polls. And there are a lot of people, I think, who are in a position to say, oh, I want to be able to say I voted for the first serious black woman candidate because it's going to check a couple of things off the box. But are you going to really vote for disastrous policies? I don't know. I just don't know. Our good friend, Dr. Keith Abloh, joins us on Friday Eve, and we talk about any number of things, and it varies week to week, but Keith has a very, very, very good nose for political stuff in addition to all the other stuff, and we're just always happy to welcome here. Keith, thank you for being here, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
My pleasure. Oh, and maybe before I don't want to forget, Lashana Tova, Chaver. I'm happy this new year maybe is a good one, right?
I would like to think that, and I hope that's the case for you and yours and all your listeners.
Well, very, very kind. I want you to put on your political hat, because you wrote a great book, which I want people to get. The lessons are still so unbelievably clear about President Trump. Keith, remind everybody of the book, and then give us an example of what President Trump right now might be doing as he's looking at the polls that say, hey, you're right in there. It's neck and neck across the country.
Well, the book is Trump Your Life, and it takes 25 really important traits of the president, and it brings them alive for people so that they can internalize them and become stronger, not just from watching the president do amazing things like stand up and say fight, fight, fight after being shot, which is amazing, but really dissect what is it about the man that allows him to do that. And so what is he thinking right now? He's thinking we're not stopping for anything. He's thinking I have faith, right, which is anathema to those on the left who see no higher power than, you know, faking voting machines, let's say.
Yep.
Right? And so I think that really, in order to be that man, you really do need to have a connection to something you see as greater than yourself. He's accused of being a narcissist by people who really don't understand that you can't do what he's doing out of ego. It's really impossible, people. I mean, I hope they'll trust me as a psychiatrist. You can't do it out of ego. You won't be able to summon the fortitude. You'll throw in the towel. You'll say, look, I've got tons of money. I don't have to do this. I don't want to be, God forbid, shot again. And so what he's doing is a demonstration of having faith that there's some destiny for him. And I believe that he believes that for the country, and he sees the two as entwined. Mm-hmm. And isn't that the story of lots of great figures from history? They saw themselves as threaded with the fabric of a great idea or ideal, in this case, the notion of America as a place of autonomy and freedom, not servitude, not communism. Right. And that's his role right now, and I think he's embraced it.
You are, as per usual, Keith, you're absolutely correct. And much of what inspires President Trump is found in your book. There's so many lessons, and I'm going to ask you again to give the name of the book, because I think it is... No, seriously, and here's why. You know,
Thank you. It's
not just selfish, me on behalf of you, but I do want you to sell the book. But no, I look at President Trump right now, and I think there's a whole new group of people looking at President Trump, and they're kind of scratching their heads, Keith, and going, okay, you've been shot at once. Well, you've been shot once. You have a guy who wants to shoot at you the second time. People are calling you all sorts of terrible things. You enter this with a whole slew of money, and after serving, you have less money. You're the subject of all sorts of insults and ridicule. They are trying to figure out why he's doing it. Now, you gave a good glimpse, but seriously, tell everybody that book again, because I want them to get it, because they can read firsthand what's behind him.
Well, it's Trump Your Life, and you know, you can get it on Amazon, Trump Your Life. Anybody who's listening probably understands that, of course, right, because we all go through periods in our lives that are periods of adversity.
Yep.
They're trials.
Yeah.
Nobody escapes this life unscathed. I've never met anybody. And that's what I love about the craft of psychiatry, is that when you really commune with people about the painful chapters, mm-hmm. you learn that people are pretty lovable because they've gone through things.
Yeah.
And anyone who's listening, and that's everybody, who's gone through things, what you want to be able to do, and what I hope the book will help people to do, is to say, that's true. That's tremendously painful. But even amidst that pain, I have some decisions to make that could allow me to be victorious amidst the suffering, amidst the trials. And one of the ways is to say, I'm not going to stop efforting for the good. And, you know, that example, by the way, the example of people not giving up and showing great love, usually for others, by the way, despite tremendous adversity, is in and of itself a huge victory, because other people see you doing that, and it's contagious in the best way, contagious. So if you're going through tremendously hard times, yes, it can be tremendously painful, whether they're economic troubles or, God forbid, health troubles. But if you can allow your kids, brother, sister, parents to see you standing tall regardless, you've won.
Yeah.
Why? Because you love those people. And none of your effort is going to be wasted.
Right.
It's all going to be internalized by the people who see you doing that. And by you, by the way. And even therefore confronting these really dark days, you can shine. It doesn't mean you won't be in pain. It means you will supersede the pain.
Right.
You'll get above it. You'll rise above, which I think is what Donald Trump is showing us.
Yep.
You can come at him a million different ways. He's not going to stop.
That's right.
And that is an incredible lesson for people out there, because, again, are we necessarily being sued by 50 different courts and people aren't shooting at us, thank God,
right.
most of us?
Right.
So, but in our own lives, there are the metaphors for that. You know, there are people who disappoint us. There are people who are unfair to us.
Right.
And if you can say that, listen, I wish it weren't the case, but it's not going to stop me. And why won't it? Well, because you're connected to something bigger than your ego. That's what his opponents don't understand. He's connected to something bigger than ego. Otherwise, he would have been stopped a long time ago.
Wow.
The 12-cylinder engine under the hood cannot be ego. That's the six-cylinder or four-cylinder engine in the Pinto.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You hit it, it explodes.
Right.
Right? This is not that. This is the 12-cylinder turbocharged engine. What is that? It's connected to much higher powers than any individual ego possibly could be.
You know, Keith, you offer an insight there that everybody on the left is going to disagree with. Everybody in the mainstream legacy media is going to, oh, no, it's all ego. It's all ego. But you, point by point, again, with your education, your experience, oh, no, that's exactly why that's not the case. And so many of us, I'm going to include myself, because when he first came down the escalator, I thought, eh, I don't think he's really running. A lot of people just had an incorrect perception, did an improper analysis, maybe have come to love him. Again, that's me. But it is that idea that this is about more than him, and that's why he doesn't stop. It's not ego.
That's right.
I'm just thrilled to hear you say that.
And listen, again, for anybody listening, for myself, for you, and you've done it, right, with the radio. You love it. You love it. You love it. Find that thing in your life that you can serve with that kind of energy.
Yep.
So that you would say, listen, no matter what happens, for me, I could be in the hospital, God forbid. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to want a piece of paper and a slim pencil. I'm going to want to write something.
Yeah.
Right? Find that thing inside you that you would do no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to quit your job today and go run and be an actor, or be a politician, but start a little bit.
Right.
Start a little bit. A poem, write one tonight. It doesn't matter. You're going to say, oh, it's not going to be that good. We don't care. That's we right. care that you serve the muse.
Oh.
Serve your best, highest instincts about your gifts. And when you do that, what the world's learning is it's pretty hard to stop a guy who isn't acting just out of ego, who really is wired to a higher power.
I love
pretty
that.
Hard to stop that guy.
Sure is.
The pharaohs learned that.
Exactly. Well, that's where we're going to leave it. Shana Tov, my friend. That is Dr. Keith Abloh. KeithAbloh.com is his website. As I told you, there's a million different things that Keith's involved in, art and writing and coaching. I mean, he's a true Renaissance man. But I want you to go to Amazon.com and get that book, Trump Your Life. These are life lessons. It's a relatively easy read, but man, are you going to be smarter at the end of that book, Trump Your Life, over on Amazon. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRV.
Out on the porch with a coffee cup, Jeff Katz and Pixie, they giving up. The world's a mess, but they stand tall, watching the news so we don't have to at all. MSNBC.
You're welcome. No, no, really. I got to do something. So that's what I do. It's probably a masochistic streak. Yep. That whole song, you going to put that up somewhere, Jerm? Why don't we get a link for it? We'll put it all up. It's a whole song that Jeremy and his robot army composed about me and my senior executive producer, Pixie, watching MSNBC. Whew. Yeah. Oh, Garth Brooks. Holy moly. Did you see this? Garth Brooks now being accused of rape? Yeah.
Come on, man.
No, by a makeup artist that worked initially for his wife, Trisha Yearwood, and then worked for him. And the woman claims that he committed sexual assault and battery. Another story said rape back in 2019. All right. Well, we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, anybody, I guess, can file a lawsuit. I don't know if that's going to be more than this or not. Now, we got a couple of things that are going to go in our soggy salad category. I do apologize about that, but...
good grief.
I know, but come on, it was only 2 out of 107, so that's not bad. I think my batting average is absolutely getting a little bit better. I saw a story yesterday, and I just wanted to share it with you. The editor of Mother Jones, which is that big left-wing publication that, I don't know if anybody still reads it, but she is outraged. She was on an airplane flight, and the flight attendant wished everybody a blessed night. She is offended. She said it's creeping Christian nationalism. Okay. Well, let me say this to you. I wish you a blessed night. And boy, do I hope that annoys her. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., my dear friend John Reed's going to be here. Make sure you join John first thing in the morning. Have a fantastic evening. God willing, you and I get the chance to do this all over again tomorrow, starting at 3. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app